Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Hi, and welcome to another GoTo Unscripted, which is an unscripted video that we totally prepared for and will sound very smart and eloquent during. I am Sophie DiBenedetto, and I gave some talks here at GoTo mostly around the LiveView framework, which is a web development framework for real-time interactive single-page applications in Elixir. And I am joined today by the very wonderful Andrea Leopardi, who also has some talks here today and who also has a book coming out soon with Pragmatic Bookshelf. But I'll let you tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, as Sophie said, I'm Andrea. I come from Italy and I've been in the... it's my first time I go to. I'm going to speak in like a couple of hours. And I have been a member of the Elixir core team for about 7 years now, long time. So it's a long time in the community as well.
Before we get into your book, actually, anything exciting that you're working on with the Elixir core team right now?
Most of the work in Elixir, I'm sure you know, is on the type stuff,
yeah.
Which none of the people in the core team are really involved with, because it's work that's being done by, except for Giuseppe, who's the creator of the language.
Yeah.
And he's working with this university professor and PhD student. Who are just like putting in all the academia sort of type of work into this. So that's the big thing that's happening in Elixir core. My job in Elixir core has always anyways been to sort of unassigned job, I guess. Like nobody told me to do it, but I just sort of gravitated towards maintaining libraries.
Mm-hmm.
So I do a lot of work on I have a lot of libraries in the Elixir ecosystem that I, one way or another, ended up maintaining or co-maintaining or writing from scratch. And so I do a lot of that. That's how I spend a lot of my open source time. So it's not really on Elixir core, especially because Elixir is like pretty much our language at this point. So there's not that much to do on a daily basis that you can pour a few people in time.
Yeah.
On, you know.
Sounds like you have your hands full, because there are very many very critical libraries in the Elixir ecosystem that we all rely on every day, though.
Yeah, that's what I like. So that's where I ended up.
Cool. How did you get involved with the Elixir core team? I don't think I know.
I got involved by just Elixir was one of the sort of first languages, maybe the first language I really fell in love with, and it was pretty early in my career. So I was out of university for not very long at that point, and I was just like exploring languages and like trying things out, and Elixir felt really nice. And I started, I wanted to do like open source sort of stuff, because it always attracted me a lot. And I started to do documentation contributions on Elixir. And Giuseppe, the creator of the language, is always super nice.
Did he give you one of those rainbow
hearts so
responses?
He has this like pre-baked GitHub response when he merges a PR, where he's like all the hearts in all the
every color.
Different colors,
it's really
like
nice.
Rainbow hearts. So yeah, I got like very excited by the contributions, and like it became really fun, and I got really involved. And then he is really good at like sort of bringing people closer and like giving them agency and responsibility, so that they feel like I felt like I was actually contributing something. So he asked me to work on Git Text, which is the internationalization localization library. It's like it comes from GNU Git Text bindings for Elixir, and he guided me through writing the whole thing. This was like around 2014, 2015, because I was pouring time into Elixir, and I just like sort of saw the opportunity, and then just sort of came about from there, I think. I joined in maybe 2016. I was working in Sweden at a company, Forza Football, there was another core team member in the company, and my team was actually like sort of mentoring me in the time. So I just like sort of fell in the right environment. And for a while it was sort of like our little Silicon Valley Elixir.
Right.
Yeah.
That sounds fun.
But what about you? I don't know how you came to Elixir either.
So I came to Elixir, I think around like 2015, 2016. A coworker and a good friend of mine, you might have met him at MPEX, Stephen Nunez, really tall guy with a beard.
Yeah.
So he and I were working together at the Flatiron School teaching programming. Mm-hmm. It was like a programming boot camp where I actually went, and that's where I learned how to code. Before I came to teach there. And we were teaching like Ruby Rails, you throw in a little bit of JavaScript, this was 2015. So that was, it probably still is what you would learn at a boot camp, but that was the move. And Steven got really excited about it because I think he watched one of Jose's early screencasts, I want to say, or like maybe something on Twitch, I don't remember. And he got kind of obsessed with it. And when Steven gets obsessed with something, like I'm going to hear all about it until I can't like think anymore. And just sort of that enthusiasm and that excitement was kind of irresistible. And one night after school wrapped up, he said, whoever wants to stay after and learn a little bit about Elixir will get pizza. And I am still waiting for that pizza, which he denies ever promising. And at that point, I was honestly kind of hooked. And I think for me, I was still very new to programming at that time. I had probably been programming Ruby for like 8 months or something. I had finished this 3-month boot camp. I had come to work at this school, you know, teaching from the program that I had graduated from, which is something that they would do a lot, hire the people as, you know, TAs and teaching assistants. And so I still had that like extreme amount of excitement about learning new things, which like I still have, but it's, you know, diminished somewhat, you know, working at like bigger companies. But it was too soon for me to understand like really what was so great about it. It was too soon for me to understand like the benefits of fault tolerance and concurrency, because I hadn't really had opportunities to see that in the wild yet, or to feel the pain of the lack of it. But I was kind of hooked on just the experience of writing it, like using these beautiful pipes to tell these little stories and pattern matching. And you know, the code that I was writing just felt so clean. And it also kind of broke my brain a little because it's so different to object orientation, which was the only kind of programming I had really learned how to do. So flash forward a couple of years, I was working with Steven again. We found ourselves on another development team together, and we both got really excited about kind of evangelizing Elixir to the organization, and everybody was starting to use it, which was really exciting. But we were still basically just a bunch of Rubyists writing like the most terrible, like sort of pseudo object oriented Elixir code. But I still learned so much like in the couple of years that I was there doing that. And sadly, that was actually the last time that I wrote Elixir professionally, because now I'm at GitHub where I write Google Docs and YAML files and like Terraform code. But being able to work on the LiveView book with Bruce Tate and kind of stay plugged into that part of the community.
Yeah, that's exactly where I wanted to go. It's like, because I know your title, I know like sort of what you do at GitHub. Yeah. We talked about this, and you're in the
observability.
So it's like, not really like super hands-on development, I guess. Right. Like, or that's what I understood. And GitHub has, I want to say, a little Elixir. I'm sure there's a little Elixir. I'm sure there's.
Yeah, somewhere. I'm just kidding, somewhere. In my heart.
Exactly. There's probably no Elixir in there. So how did you come to like write a book about something that you're not, like, how do you get so passionate
it's challenging. But I mean, first of all, I would say that I do really enjoy and I get a lot out of the work that I do at GitHub, because I really like to do that kind of orchestration, like operational work. And on the observability team, that's what I get to do. I get to think about our infrastructure for collecting telemetry signals and making it available to users. And I get to think about sort of the overall operation of what is a very distributed system. So that is also sort of the overlap with the Beam, right? Where we work with a lot of distributed systems. And I think that thinking has really benefited my work at GitHub, and kind of vice versa as well. But as far as the book goes, it kind of came about. I honestly still don't understand how this happened. So Bruce Tate, you know, very experienced elixirist, like very experienced author, you know, teacher, speaker, as well as just being a wonderful person who spends a lot of time mentoring people in the community, you know, supporting people that are up and coming. He reached out to me like kind of out of nowhere. This was going back a while now because we've been working on this book for a long time because Levy's been something of a moving target. He reached out to me in like 2020, I think, just to have an initial conversation. I think we had met briefly at ElixirConf. I think he had seen, you know, some of my talks and blog posts. And we had a chat over Zoom. I remember meeting his golden retriever, who was very cute at the time. And we just kind of hit it off, but we sort of put a pin in it for later because it was too early to really write something about LiveU. And then we got started on the book in 2021, and we've basically been writing it constantly ever since because it keeps changing. And I feel so like sad for our readers sometimes because I'm not exaggerating when I say we'll release a new version. And then like 2 days later, there'll be a new LiveU version and then the feedback will come flooding in like, this is out of date, this doesn't work. And I'll be like, I am very sorry, but I'm not going to change it right now. So yeah, it's been a really nice way to kind of stay connected to Elixir and have a reason to write Elixir code.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But I don't get to write it in production, which, you know, I think is a shame sometimes because I don't get to speak to that experience. And when I go out and talk about LiveU, you know, people have questions or their own experiences working with it in production. And I do kind of feel like I'm missing that. And I want to learn about what you guys are doing. You actually get to write Elixir.
We're actually doing, I joined the Veeps quite recently, which is a like streaming platform for concerts, like music shows and comedy shows and stuff like that, which is actually launching today.
Oh, cool. Oh, my gosh. And you're here. Like, amazing.
Yeah. It's like, it's night in the U.S. It's like, this is work. It's like, later I'll have to sort of be on online for this because people want TV and all sorts of stuff. Like, we're going to, like, the big launch, right? So, anyways, this is the deal with the product. And it's all, I joined very recently. I joined in like 5 months ago, maybe.
Yeah.
And it's all LiveU. Like it's
really?
Big.
I don't think you told me that. I knew it was Elixir and it was Phoenix. I assumed some LiveU. That's very cool. No,
it's all LiveU. Like it's very, very little JavaScript. It's a really, really tiny team. And like where I'm going with this is that I've been involved with Elixir very long. I've been involved with Phoenix from the beginning. I've used Phoenix for mostly HTTP APIs. I've never because I'm very backend oriented in my work.
A lot of Elixirists.
So I don't really also get particular joy out of like shipping products. I like to work on systems more. So I never really quite did an effort to learn LiveU. I understand how it works. Yeah. You know, like you get to read about it a little bit, but I never really quite went super deep into LiveU, into writing, into production. And now I joined here where like everything is LiveU. And like I have to, you know, really like give the hats off to the whole, like it works really well.
Yeah.
And I was listening to your talk earlier and like all the things you said, like, oh, this is like for small teams is great. And it's really like, we are a very small team because right now we have two backend developers and two frontend developers who, and I'm the only one that had the previous Elixir experience. Everybody else That's just amazing. Learning on the job.
Yeah.
Not through me, like from our CTO who helps, but it's still the CTO. So it has a lot of other stuff to do as well. So, and it's not, it's like a very tiny team. We have one infrastructure person and that's all. And we like, they built, I didn't have a chance to contribute that much because like it's been not very long, but they built like a really big, system with like just like tons of features. Like it's a video streaming platform where like you have, you know, like organizations like labels, for example, putting out content that they need to like upload and stuff like that, and like selling merchandising for the shows and like all the accounts. Yeah. Like it's a big platform with a lot of features, and it was it's amazing how quick it was to how much stuff they could build in such a small team. So I really got to like experience hands on.
I mean, I'm not surprised to hear that at all. I hear that all the time. People are like, we are a super small team. We are mostly new to Elixir, Phoenix, or LiveU, and we built, you know, 100 incredible things. It is such a powerful framework. And the few experience that I've been able to have working with small teams in my previous role who were learning LiveView and implementing it, and just kind of seeing like how happy and excited it makes people to go from like a week ago, I didn't know anything. I've shipped something. It works amazingly well. It's super interactive. It's a really cool experience. So that's awesome.
It works really well. And I sort of never, you mentioned this in your talk as well, where you said like one of the use cases where maybe LiveView doesn't doesn't cut it is where network latency and network stability are issues, which I agree, like it's not, but I sort of put in the bucket of use cases where LiveView doesn't really work. For a long time, I put just generally something like with a lot of like high scale, you know, like lots of users. And turns out it's fine.
I think it's amazing for that because you have the beam. So you have all the concurrency you could possibly wish for.
It's really fine. It works really well. And the beam is like, I've seen a lot of beam systems in production, and it's like, so, it has some characteristic that make, writing like system, stable system very easy. And I'm not talking about the resiliency necessarily, also just about like, for example, memory usage, like the fact that processor garbage collected individually, you always see like, I just loop at graphs because I really like to see like that it's just stable. And you see peaks, you know, and like the memory goes up a little bit, but it stays like, it never like you really never really overflow anything, you know, like it's really nice, like sort of self-regulates a lot. And like LiveView is just really literally like just a
It's just a process.
Big old OTP applications. So it's not like, it's not doing anything. Like all the, I think the genius part of LiveView is all the JavaScript interactions to like send totally on the stuff as well. Because all the processing and resilient stuff was already there. Like it's not, it was already there. It was there in Phoenix with channels after that. So it was just like all this stuff.
It was there in OTP prior to that.
It was like
that.
30 years ago. Exactly.
So it's, I think it's so cool to see how it is built on top of OTP that way and how it does get all that power from there. And I have definitely had this experience where I'll sort of peel back and look into some LiveView source code. And on the back end, I'm like, oh, wow, there it is. It's just a process. That's so cool. And then I'll peel back like Chris McCord's JavaScript and I'll just be like, nope, I have no idea what's going on here.
I refuse to look at
it. It definitely breaks my brain a little bit, but I have like so much respect and appreciation for how much JS he has baked into this framework so that I don't have to understand ever.
I like to know how it works in principle.
That's
enough.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, it's, of course, it's traceable. I don't mean to say it's not clean code or anything. I just mean to say that I'm not good at it.
Same. Like, I've never really looked at it. I'm sure it's it's great, as great as it can be. It's just like, it's like my brain doesn't really click with JavaScript, for example, and a bunch of other stuff.
And I think that's, again, one of the powerful things about LiveView is it really enables us as Elixir developers, as small teams of Elixir developers, to build what you used to need to be like a JavaScript expert to be able to do. It still might not look very nice if you're me and you're trying to make like two divs line up, which I basically can't do without a lot of Googling, but it'll work.
I'm the same. I'm the same. And like I was, you know, I really had to sort of hit my head when I joined, because I, in the first maybe like 2 weeks, I shipped like OTP for admins, like SMS to say, and it had a form, you know, it had been 5 years since I had done anything like that showed up on the front end. Like everything was always sort of like very back end, like very infrastructure back end, you know, like designing the system and like writing docs and like doing all this stuff and like writing little internal libraries and performance optimizations and all stuff like that. And it was everything so far from something that someone touched, which I'm good with. Like, I don't really particularly get a particular joy out of like building things that people touch, but still, like, it's impressive that someone like me who doesn't know how to do it can do it, right?
That's exactly how I feel. I did a demo app for the talk I gave yesterday on LiveView Streams, and it's meant to be sort of like a Slack clone, and it kind of looks like Slack because Tailwind is now baked into Phoenix. And I built this like a couple months ago and I still couldn't tell you how I did it. And there's one feature where, you know, you click like the little X button next to a message to delete it. And that must have taken me like half a day to be like, how do I get this button to be right there? But, you know, Phoenix and Tailwind make it as easy, I think, as it can be for, you know, you and I to make something that doesn't look
shit. And like the, for me, the super interesting thing is that it's not, I don't think it's targeted at, you know, you and I, it's like you and me. It's
That's
targeted
right,
at like people that can really be productive with that. Because like, you know, someone with a big, like deep expertise in like system design or like distributed systems or like really back-end work, they are empowered to do some front end work.
But
like, I think the other way around is where it really shines. Like I like literally have people in my team that are, who are front end people who write at this point, like, I don't know, like 70% Elixir for writing like the, all the live view stuff, you know, like it's the components and the live view stuff and everything. And like, it's a lot of work is done in that. And they are not people who are like, you know, who have like deep expertise in Elixir yet. Right. So it's awesome that it enables them to do all this work on a backend, essentially on a backend code base. Without really having to learn a lot about OTP or like all about all this stuff, which is like, I think arguably complex. It makes sense to me, but like, we've been here a long time.
So
like, you know, like, now it seems natural, but it's like, it's really weird. Like, it's a really different paradigm from most ecosystems out there, right? So,
especially most front end frameworks. And I think you're right that that's really where the power and the benefit comes from. I think like, maybe this is just my bias because I'm weaker sort of in front end, or I don't prefer it to back end. But I think what LiveView gets you is you can take someone who is a JavaScript expert and amazing at front end and will build beautiful interactive UIs, and you can give them all the tools they need to build the full single page application themselves and take advantage of all the benefits of the Beam, all the concurrency, resiliency, all the fault tolerance, you know, all the power of LiveView processes. And then they get to leverage their incredibly sophisticated front-end skills.
Yeah.
Because it's not the case that you don't get to write JavaScript or that you don't have to write JavaScript.
Yeah.
You can plug that in. You can use JS hooks. You use the JS bindings. And you kind of create like these super developers almost if you have someone that's front-end oriented.
Yeah.
Whereas if you took a back-end developer and you were like, go make me a Node and React app, it would take that person like forever and it would probably suck.
Oh, yeah.
So
It's really awesome. Like the only work that I, for example, that I essentially do to help the front-end people writing the LiveView stuff is like helping them with like database essentially stuff.
Which so like, they don't even need you.
I mean,
for,
they
like,
they know how to do it and just like to like sort of help out with you know, query performance and like pulling and stuff like that.
That's
but like they can do stuff on their own,
they can do like, how do I handle an event from the client? What do I send back to the server? Because that API in LiveView is so simple.
And the fact that you work in a single sort of code base is really cool, I think.
Yes.
Because I never really, like at the company I was working previously, we had, when I started, maybe five services, five Elixir code bases being services. And when I left, we were up to like 70.
Wow.
And we were doing it the best, that we could, I think. And like, it was, it was not a bad experience. It worked well, but you could see the problems in like the 70 code bases to manage, right? Like I personally poured a bunch of time into figuring out, like, I want to upgrade Phoenix. How do I do it on a scale of like 70 code bases owned by different teams? Like, how can we do that, right? So working a single code base is really cool for that, right? And we have actually really unusual, I think unusual from what I hear, setup where we have like a big umbrella app and we actually ship different applications in the umbrella app as different like mix releases. So they're sort of having like multiple packages in a single app. And this build tool for Elixir gives you the ability to sort of package and build releases for different subsets of these apps, right? And we're using that, and it's like working really well. So we have like sort of libraries that multiple apps use that about they're all in the same code base. So like you run tests for everything, or like dependencies. They are unified, right? Like, so if you wanna, like, if you have multiple apps depending on Phoenix, they just depend all on the same version. So you are sort of like, it's a different approach. It probably won't scale to like
70
or 70 applications in a single umbrella, because then the workflow, for example, of running tests becomes like, okay, it's like like an hour deal, and then you don't want to do it. But for now, it's working really well. So like enabling us to ship really like lots of stuff really fast.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
That's cool. So we've talked about why Elixir is great for web development.
Mm-hmm.
We know why it's great for your big monolithic or umbrella applications.
Yeah.
Is it good for networking, Andrea?
What a with an innocent question.
Yeah.
So I'm writing a book about that. Exactly. It's going to be called Network Programming in Elixir and Erlang. And I think, yes, like obviously I really believe in this. I got really passionate about a year ago, maybe, about like, I was trying to learn, this is the short story, I was trying to learn Rust, and I was doing Advent of Code, as people do, and I finished Advent of Code, like, you know, not finished every puzzle, but I like sort of like made it through.
Code, solved them all, Rust expert.
Yes, like us. No, I learned enough that I was like happy with that part, but it's a very specific kind of problem, obviously, so I moved on to, I was like, oh, what can I used to sort of like Advent of Code to learn Rust because I'm not using it at work, right? Mm-hmm. And someone pointed me to ProtoHackers, which is a website that has sort of similar challenges to Advent of Code, but made for networks. It's like build a server that does this and then they ping your server from a single IP that you can allow. So it's like, it's fine.
Yeah.
And you solve these network challenges and it's really fun. And I was starting to do it in Rust. And like I started to use like this Tokyo, you know, the async stuff that they have for, and like I sort of like came out of the, you know, the of 10 years of out of 10 years of Elixir, and I said like, wait, like this is how you do it in the, like in other like in most other languages, and like I was suffering through this, you know, because in Elixir it matches so well with it aligns so well like the paradigm and. The design of the language and the virtual machine, they align so well with how networks work, where you have these independent actors, which can be like sockets somewhere, like servers and clients or processes.
The actor like, model just like, it to me, so it well. Maps reality so well. So I'm not all surprised to hear you say that you felt that the model there kind of describes networking to
it
you.
Just like it's so close to like how TCP works in particular, right? Like sending messages, receiving messages, like having these like different process monitoring stuff. It's very, very close to how TCP works semantically, right? So it's such a good fit, and the asynchronous nature of Elixir is like it's how you would do it, and to write something like that in another language for me, it turns out like it was hard.
Hurts.
So I was like, wait, maybe I do this as an educational piece of content. I like do, I did a few screencasts on YouTube on these ProtoHackers challenges. And then I was like, wait, there's a book in there. Cause, you know, there's a lot of, there's definitely a lot of, expertise I built, throughout the years about writing like network stuff in Elixir. And the problem with this stuff is that it's usually, too low level for, there to be like really good accessible resources on this stuff, right? So you find a lot of stuff maybe on like a higher level
building a web app, and, Phoenix,
WebSockets, exactly. Like, channels. There's a lot of resources because a lot of people approach that, but then when you gotta dig deeper, and this is sort of like there are other examples of books like this in the Erlang, like Erlang in Anger is a really good book that people can check out, but it's like sort of like a really Erlang in production, like when something goes wrong. And this is the sort of thing that like, yeah, like it's really nice to have a resource that points you to the things to do, even if, because I have it in my hand, but like, it's really hard and it's all out there. So like documentation is out there. Everything's like actually out there. It's really hard to, piece it together and like see the patterns and like so think about like all the pitfalls and like all the little things that can go wrong. So like I decided to just like try to put it in a book. I reached out to you. what are the chances? Because you're the Elixir series editor.
Yeah, for PragProg.
So I reached out to you and I started writing the book. So I'm like halfway done more or less.
Very exciting.
So it's going pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm really excited for it to come out for myself, but also because I don't know if you feel this way. I'm curious to hear what purpose you feel this book will serve, sort of beyond the obvious, like let's do networking in Elixir. But do you think it'll be a good way for folks who are newer to Elixir to really dive into how Elixir works and what are some of the benefits to working with that?
Very good question. I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay.
I think because I would recommend this to someone like coming
who's newer.
Because like the things where I had to put the bunch of this stuff in practice were always like quite the low level use cases. Like I wrote a bunch of database drivers, for example. Turns out like it's really useful to know like about this stuff if you want to write a database driver, right?
Yeah.
At some point I had to write a HTTP 2 client because we didn't have anything that really worked, and we were doing something with like Apple push notifications. It was like, I don't know, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And like they wanted HTTP 2, so I had to like hack together this HTTP 2 client. So like but these are like, I don't think it's a normal daily thing that you do, you know, like it's pretty rare occurrences. But like at the end of the day, I think that like, you know, this is there's a lot of stuff that like happens through the network, like all the communication that computers do is through a network. So like being able to like really know, and like, for example, LiveView is really awesome, but you gotta know what's happening if you get to a point where you want to like scale it up a lot. Like,
absolutely, that's
the point. Like, obviously, as any system, it sort of like starts to crack and break, and you like it's really hard then to like say, okay, this is the thing I need to fine tune, or this is the thing that I need to fine tune, and all this stuff. And so I think it's like, I don't know, geared towards people that are interested in networking. I don't know, like most, like 80% maybe for me, I just like want to put this down because it's not in my hand. Yeah. Like, I'm like, go back to it. But it's a bit of a weird, we'll see. I'm very curious about who will buy this book. I can really guess if anyone will buy this book. First of all, I really hope someone will buy this book, and I'm really curious about
buy
this book, please. and tell me that you bought it so that I know like who's buying it, because I'm really curious, like, you know, what's a target audience with this, because like I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think there's something there for people that, you know, want to get more into networking and understand that better. But I also think there's something there for people that want to learn Elixir better, maybe not folks who are new to Elixir, but who want that deeper understanding of how to really leverage all of its benefits to solve complicated problems.
Yeah, yeah, I actually hit the nail on the spot there, I think, because there's a lot of, like, I wrote all the TCP chapters for now, and there's, I realized that there's a lot of content that is really about, like, you know, this is like a niche thing in Elixir that you never would use in Europe. I mean, we're really like unusual to use in your Phoenix sort of vanilla application.
Right, you don't have to, because like Phoenix already does it for
you. Like, you know, Erlang aliases, or like, this is a bunch of stuff that like you'd really never get to use unless you're writing like really sort of like nitty gritty detail code, or like you're writing little stuff, or you're writing pools of processes, or like all this sort of stuff. And these are, for example, pools of processes is a really good example, like that I just thought of, which is like, you're going to have to write them in networks. Anything you do with networks is going to have some sort of pooling going on. But the pooling extends to a lot more things. Like, it can extend to like, you know, like live view processes are essentially like a pool of web socket connections.
Cowboy's a pool. So you'll get to understand these frameworks and these technologies that you might be taking advantage of every day as an Elixir developer. Yeah. That you've, you know, you, it's a privilege as an Elixir developer, as a Phoenix developer, that you don't have to know how this works under the hood. But I think that many of us do get to a point where we want to know. We know it's going to make us better developers.
Yeah, I hope so.
And reading source code is obviously one way to do it. That can be very intimidating. And I think reading your book is going to be another.
I hope so. Because, like, yeah, exactly. That's what I meant before. Like, there stuff is out there, you know, like there's, there's source code, there's like documentation, but it's really hard to like piece together and read.
You're going
to
tell us a story about it.
Yeah. That's the idea. And hopefully it's also like one of my hopes is it's going to attract people that are sort of experts in networks that already are doing like lower level network stuff.
Interesting. You're going to get them to adopt Elixir because
it works
perfect
really,
fit for networking.
Yeah, because it works really well, right? I know that like performance wise, it's not like the best language out there, but like there are not everything's about performance all the time, right? There are use cases where like maybe you don't need.
I mean, it's good enough for most.
It's good enough for most use cases. And I was speaking to a person, I will not name anything because I don't remember anything, but like this, I was speaking to a person who was building a company where they were measuring network latency across networks using Elixir, right? So they essentially had these like Elixir programs plugged into various parts of the network infrastructure. And those are like, for example, like they were just like sort of listening passively to stuff, and those are not use cases. Maybe you need like high performance.
Yeah.
And like, I want to tell people that there's a language that when the use cases allow it, it's really awesome. Like, it's another world writing, I think, network code in Elixir and Erlang compared to a lot of other languages. Just like so much easier. Like, it's just, it's sort of like really, it was built for that originally, right? Because like they were building networks of phones essentially.
That's
and it like still works so well. So maybe that's a that's a slice of audience that.
Yeah, I think that's a really powerful argument. So I think that our listeners, our viewers, should read your book if they want to learn more about networking, if they want to learn more about Elixir, if they want to understand how the tools that they use every day work. And if they work with networking and they want the perfect solution for many use cases.
I think so. I think that's a good and it's definitely so it's a little bit more niche. Your book is definitely like
web development is a little more broad.
For web developers, I would like recommend to learn look into LiveView.
I would too.
Anyways, like whatever you're doing, like it's just such a cool thing. And I know that like some frameworks are sort of catching up on Rails as the channels thing.
It's like Hotwire.
They're like they're sort of catching up on.
Can't beat the beam. I'm sorry. Like you can put your frameworks together. Might be ergonomic, but they're not gonna have OTP.
Just that the beam is sort of built like it was built for that, and now we just found ourselves with this tool from 30 years ago.
That's exactly what
most people really want in their web applications, which is why I really do think that that's why Elixir is used so much in web development, right? Because like it's the same thing over again.
Telecommunications.
Yeah, exactly. So it just like fits. That's why a lot of people are building Elixir, and then it's such a really nice language. So it's expanding into like machine learning and like IoT, whatever. But like a big slice is still, I think, web dev, which is I think just because it's like such a good fit. So and LiveView is like the the icing on the cake, I think, on this thing. Like it really. It really also like differentiates Elixir, right? Like you were talking about in your talk.
Yeah, it's
like
I do think we're going to see it drive adoption. I haven't seen that happen too much, honestly, yet, but I still feel like it's going to happen. I think it is going to happen. I feel like we'll see similar trends with networking. You know, you mentioned machine learning, which we haven't really talked about. It's not something that you and I think are too involved in individually, but I think there are really compelling cases to be made for doing ML and Elixir now, thanks to Sean Moriarty, thanks to Jose. Buy Sean's book from Prague Prague as well. Buy all the books from Prague Prague. I think, we can sort of leave it there. Elixir is good for everything. Buy all the books about it.
Yes.
And
multiple copies if you want.
Yeah, multiple copies. Right. Buy one for all your friends. Well, this was a pleasure.
Glad we
got to talk.
Yes.
And thank you to our viewers. Check out our talks when they get released from GoTo.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.